I'm John.
Hi, I'm Livia.
And hi, I'm Hi.
And this week, we've decided to talk about the Borg and whether they're going to make us quit Star Trek.
I, for one, am excited to discuss their transition from terrifying, weird, lizardy people. Well, actually, that's a sort of a mid-transition. From terrifying cube to just fun little guys you can get to hang out with. They're great now.
Yeah,
there's nothing to worry about.
The Borg went through the same social transition that, I don't know, the French went through. They were villains, and now they're cuddly little morons.
But are they? We just don't know. That's the...
The French or the Borg? I can't tell who I'm more offended for.
Their assimilation metaphors aside for the French, the thing is, we don't know even if they are little guys or if it's an entirely new subset of little guys. And the only two little guys that we see of this new self-imposed Borg faction are just two white women going around space and somehow picked up a car.
It's the Ellen DeGeneres show.
Oh, God.
Stop.
So just to clarify to everyone, there are spoilers from now on, as always,
yes,
on this podcast. This podcast is designed for people who have watched Star Trek or don't care about spoilers. If you're going to complain to us about spoilers in your Quit Star Trek pod, get a life. Go outside, read a book. My current
we'll put a spoiler tag for you. Yeah.
No, we're not doing that.
How long has the episode been out?
It's 3 days.
I've lost all track of time.
It came out Thursday. You know, if you're gonna really be pissed about spoilers, go read a book. I'm currently reading Death of a Regiment. You probably won't like it. I do. Anyway. But this episode ended and resolved many of the plots of Picard season 2 by having Agnes and the Borg Queen merge to form a new happy clappy Borg collective thing.
So
that wants to join the Federation so it can guard a wormhole, which would be a resoundingly satisfying plot for a 2-episode arc about a new villain in TNG and a profoundly absurd arc to finish off the story of one of the best villain species Star Trek ever came up with. Yep. That for the last, since the point of its creation, they have just screwed with. And to discuss this, we've brought on the professional Borg expert, menace to civil society at large. Hi.
You got the doctorate, got the honorary PhD in Borg studies, related archivings.
So I know I watched Picard season 10 finale, the season 2 finale and Regeneration. Olivia, you watched the first Borg episode or bits of it.
Yes.
They're actually terrifying to start with, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if it went downhill by giving them a queen. It was much more terrifying in that moment. Like, I was scared that the crew weren't going to make it out of it. Like, I don't know that there's a fucking 1,000 seasons after this and a new show.
Yeah.
And maybe they were more terrifying with no discernible person to interact with.
The problem is when you get into narrative device, because you can make a queen work in the same capacity that bees can be terrifying to certain people. And you are always aware that a queen bee is out there, even if she is not directly involved in a sort of, you know, swarming or like stinging, that sort of way. Much in the same way of like, there is a human body and you have a queen unit that is not a distilled character. And if you approach a Borg queen as more of a part of a larger body, like a spinal cord or a very major organ that cannot exist without the rest of the collective. And this is the mistake where you were pointing out very well, is that Q Who is one of the best Borg episodes because it is purely relying on the fact that the Borg are a hive mind species. It is a multiplicity. It is an entity that is completely different from how we function on a individual and brain chemistry level.
I mean, and the interesting bit about Q here is that's not when assimilation is introduced.
No.
Even best of both worlds does not necessarily imply the concept of mass assimilation.
Yes, because when Picard was talking to I forget her name.
Agnes.
Whoopi.
Guinan.
Long day. Okay. When Picard is talking to Guinan, yeah. I was like, why is she being so like sort of withholding? Why is she not saying the main issue? I didn't realize that it takes time for them to add this even more terrifying element to the plot. Yeah. I mean, it was enough for me to see them regenerating instantly every time they attacked to be terrified. So
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, the concept of assimilation tubules and that sort of zombie-like urgency factor was not even introduced until first contact happened.
Really?
And
is
no.
that late?
Yeah, you do see a small glimpse of it during Best of Both Worlds when Picard is under the conversion table and, you know, they're doing the whole, like, head drill thing.
It's unclear whether that's specific to Locutus.
Yes.
Or... because even like Hugh does not imply that Hugh is human. And you know, we are obviously talking to the Hugh expert, but there's no, like, none of the guys Hugh in Iborg or Regeneration, there's no real acknowledgement of species, is there?
Yeah, there's hints of it, especially like in First Contact, like you see different makeups they've done for Cardassians. Klingons, humans, whereas in, like you were saying, Q Who, you have the Borg babies, and that is a supposed, like, a genetic slurry of all the different species that they have cataloged, you know, assimilated and put into a blender to spit out your Borg infants, and then by Voyager, you have the concept of, like, the maturation chambers that's not really introduced in Q.
If anything, the Borg baby concept is more interesting from a hive mind perspective because
yes.
it implies self-sustainment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
it
why
implies
it was so...
that the Borg decision to destroy civilization
yep.
to gather resources is not based on a need for survival, but could possibly be a choice.
Yes.
It's Which is very even much, more terrifying.
It's very much a body creating new cells for it, whereas that these are less of individuals that have agency and more so of this is a unit that the collective is able to project a small part of consciousness into, or just it's very similar in a concept. Like whenever people are talking about like the distinctions between individuality and like what Borg drones are, think of it like. You got a big pitcher of water and around you, you have a bunch of little cups. And each time the collective needs a specific task done or some sort of operation, you know, in terms of like, say that when they were on the Enterprise D and, you know, they registered as a threat, the collective is able to activate those certain drones as you would blood platelets in a body fighting off an infection. So you start to lose steam on the Borg when you condense it into one individual's experience rather than leaning into that thing of I am a multifaceted consciousness that is able to branch itself in from multiple bodies. So especially like with Borg babies, that's the fun part. That's why the one in Lower Decks is so charming because it's like you see, you know, the acknowledgement of it. First of all, it's like, thank you for remembering Borg babies. They're still out there.
I just
their little Borg mysteries.
I feel like it's. Did you know that when Voyager was launched, the Voyager writers and DS9 writers did a deal, and were like, okay, so you're not allowed. Voyager writers are like, you're not allowed to do Borg stories.
Yeah.
But in exchange, we're not going to talk about the Gamma, Alpha, or Beta quadrants ever. You can just do that.
And
I think that's. I love that they gave up so much creative power to get their hands on the Borg and then just fucked it.
And then just did nothing. Well, they did do some. I will say some of the best Borg episodes for Voyager were actually, in my opinion, Survival Instinct and Scorpion. Because Survival Instinct, I really love that dynamic between the three XBs, and the literal only way it could have been better is if they ended up in a polycule after it. And Scorpion, because that two-parter does not involve the Borg Queen in any way, and I dread to think what it would have been like if it did. Like, the whole ambiguity with the Species 8472 war was just a wonderful concept, and the idea that the Borg had officially knocked a bee's, like a beehive, over that they could not handle. And what a wonderful metaphor to, you know, examine the Borg. It's like, you are not perfect because you had to ask for help in a war that you started.
So, deeply embarrassing, really.
Yeah, it's a great examination of, like, what is the futility of you collecting all of these resources and all this technology if you're not going to be able to inevitably beat every single thing that you come across. And yeah, I love Scorpion two-parter. It's a very fun, the only it's a little question, you know, when they use Chakotay's former status as a slightly assimilated dude to knock Seven out of the collective for their own, okay, bye bitch, here we go, sort of thing. But
I mean, that whole plot, Olivia, have you seen that episode?
I'm just surprised that Chakotay had some usefulness, so.
Okay, no. Basically, spoiler for Voyager, you should have watched it already, I don't care. There's an episode where Chakotay encounters a planet full of XBs, mm-hmm. essentially.
Oh, I've seen this. Wait, is this when they're chilling? They're all like half assimilated or whatever.
Kind of, yeah.
They re-assimilate themselves because they think it's better.
Which, yeah, that's a really strange episode. The first 5-6 of that, I'm like super on board with. And then the very end, they kind of self-defeat their own purpose. So it's like, we respect everybody's agency. You want to live as individuals. Okay, you know what? Never mind, Chakotay. We're going to override you and pilot you like a little RC drone unit.
This isn't the same episode where they all like have escaped from the Borg somehow and they all find each other. This is, no, we're fine with servitude.
Yeah.
It's meant to be okay because they are... And in, they have made the decision, but they didn't make the decision. They were like, no, you guys who don't want to collectivize, you.
Yeah, because there's in the episode, Chakotay and another entity, they crash land on this planet, and like they initially don't know that it has to do with XBs or like former Borg.
They've all got wigs on.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, we're fighting different factions. And you know, there's a bit of the allure building up to it. And it's really strange in the idea where it's that you were all one giant hive mind, and you were basically other people. You were once each other, and now you no longer are. So the idea that they immediately revert back to like their home, like extreme xenophobia is just ingrained in these people.
I mean, to be fair, if I was put in a hive mind with, you know, I don't know, that's the same.
I put Star Trek hive mind.
If the entirety of Trek Twitter was put in a hive mind and they broke that hive mind, we would immediately start killing all the fucking people. Wouldn't we? Just because to fight them to have them exist in our brains.
If you were in a hive mind, you would just nonstop be sending people chocolate orange emojis like all the time.
Bombarding them with random thoughts about logistics. It's like,
yeah, logistics. I get ship schematics beamed down into my unit.
You're trying to assimilate somebody. I'm just like, how do you repair a starship in space? Like, I'm busy. Very busy.
I would just be spamming everyone with Megablocks Quark, as I should.
Megablocks Quark.
He's not actually Megablocks, but listen, Alex ruined my entire life with this revelation.
No, just keep it up. Just keep saying it's Megablocks Quark, because Megablocks Quark, just saying that is just
it's way better. It's like trademarkable. Creo Quark is trademarkable.
I could sort of see O'Brien reading it on a toy Molly's got this Megablocks Quark, and then sort of slowly backing away from it.
Part of the Megablocks DS9 line.
How does this get into my house? But, I mean, it's a weird episode because it's sort of...
Which are you talking about, Unity?
Star Trek's relationship with being assimilated and de-assimilated is just silly.
Well, it's less that it's silly and less of they can never get people who have come out of extremely damaging environments and are relishing in who they are today to write these episodes. Because the biggest, the most overjoying factor of being an XB character is being able to relish in the self-made identity of who you are. There's a very poignant line in Picard season one, I believe it's episode three, where Hugh is talking to Soji and he tells her, it's like, a new name can be the first step into a new identity. And that's very powerful, especially considering like Hugh, for as far as we know, was one of the Borg babies. He was a complete tabula rasa in the sense that when the Enterprise picked him up all the way back in iBorg, I mean, all he knew was like the basics of like, you know, communication and function. He knew all these things, but that is all you are. It's just information. There is no further gleaning of personhood. So jump forward 30 plus years to Picard, and like the idea that you have a character who is telling somebody who has never known the collective in that sort of sense, that is very powerful in a tool that de-assimilation, that metaphor could be used for people. And it varies a lot by circumstance, how long you were in the collective, whether or not you have memories of a life pre-collective. There's a lot of variables for that. And episodes could certainly take advantage of the fact that there's a lot of variables in that. But a lot of times they just don't know how to approach it or at least have some sort of consistency.
Outside of Hugh, the most well-adjusted XB we see is Picard.
Is he well-adjusted?
No,
he had to go roll around the mud to feel better about it with Robert for a little while. I mean, then he was fine.
That was, yeah. There's Janeway, but they're basically the lesser about Unimatrix Zero, the better.
Oh, Unimatrix Zero. Wait, I got to break out my chart for different XB categorizations, the XB alignment chart.
You're right. There's a really interesting space for discussing trauma reactive, yeah. Trauma recovery, obviously queer and trans allegories.
Yeah.
And the closest we got to that was obviously Jonathan Del Arco working his heart out on Picard season one before they murked him.
He worked so hard. He gave those people Raffi and Seven on a silver platter and they were just like, bye.
Why would you get rid? I mean, this is just, I've tried to avoid this episode descending into an anti-Star Trek Picard rant, but what is it with that show and refusing to do anything interesting?
It's honest. I can't believe really how it ended in season two, knowing that end of season two is essentially the end of the story for the main characters that we know before we go on to TNG season eight. It's just extremely underwhelming. I think it should turn into an anti-Star Trek Picard rant.
Yeah. The most disappointing thing about, like, because I will say right off the bat, I will go on record, episodes 1-6 were absolutely baller for a Borg liker like me in terms of exploring what made the Borg queen, like, if you remove the presence of the collective, what are you left with? You are left with a unit who is used to the idea of having a voice, having ambition, having goals as the directorial voice of the collective. There's a lot to be gleaned with that. And especially, you know, when a lot of Borg queens are all, you know, white women, you get into the opportunity to tell a really interesting story of institutionalized power and examining you yourself. Like, how much are you a victim of this society and how much of a role do you have in propagating it? And then unfortunately, it's like when you get to Agnes and Borg Queen later on in the latter half of the season, you have this problem of like, they are at rival with one another and the Borg Queen is constantly telling Agnes like, oh, you have this cooperation. We have this connection that we all value. You know what the problem is? You never show that dynamic with the Borg. And that came when you just used the soldiers, the SWAT team as RC units, rather than examining like, okay, now the Borg Queen has different drones. How does that bring in the, how is Agnes able to witness that collective mindset? How is she able to see like, oh, this is really cool. This is something I want to go along with. Instead, it's the least sexy boardrooms I've ever seen in my life. And there is no hint of the other drones playing a part. The collective, as we see at the end of Picard season 2, is not an equitable hive mind. It is a control, like you have the one up here and maybe Borg drones. I don't know. We don't
have you
see
ever watched
them.
Do you watch, have you ever watched Doctor Who? Hi.
Cybermen? Are you talking to me
about
Cybermen?
Thinking, I was thinking about the old campy Cybermen.
Oh, where, I haven't seen the really old ones, no.
The camp Cybermen, who is incredibly nebulous how the hive mind works, but it's shit. And they are just basically radio control units. They're just not trying, are they?
It's...
See the episode... Did you finish episode 9, Olivia?
I finish both in a way.
It's a bit. Well,
I skipped the Borg scenes because I honestly, I don't think Picard had anything else to offer me. I was fine doing that.
Yeah. Well, okay. My favorite part about that is how Agnes and Jurati, they just took the ship without laying like, you know, you can have the ship. Can you just like wait for us to make sure that the future gets set in motion right? No, they had to go right now.
Why did you didn't have to?
They deserve it. They deserve a little honeymoon, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely going off bullshit. On a joyride. I'm happy for them.
The thing about the whole Borg Queen plot is that very much they have this really interesting idea of the temptations of collective and very fruity stuff, obviously, about the Borg Queen and what she can offer Jurati, a person who is quite explicitly the text says is sad and lonely.
Yes.
Honestly, no, that really, that entire plot line was so frustrating.
It kind of skips between being a bit fruity and also a bit
like
is she negging Jurati?
The
Borg Queen negging Jurati?
The episode 3, when they're doing the back and forth between each other's bodies, and there is that dichotomy of like, where does Agnes end and the Borg Queen start, and you know, back and forth. That was great. That was a like you're almost at the cliff in terms of like really getting into some big brain transhumanism stuff of like exploring what it means to be a multiplicity within multiple bodies. And then the honestly, like my biggest complaint is just they just did not do it when the time came, when because the entire season you're building up to this, oh no, we can't let the Borg Queen assimilate anybody else, we can't let her get her hands on any drones. That's the biggest thing. But what she does, there's no further extrapolation on like what it means to be in a collective mind and a body. And fucking Randy on Twitter, I was talking with him on Discord the other night, makes a really good point of saying like, you know, nope, most conventional viewers are not going to see like Agnes and Jurati as like an entire Borg collective. They're not going to see, they're just going to be seeing Agnes and Jurati. And from then, it just kind of acts like a power-up for Jurati, rather than
She got Mirror Universe, basically. Oh, no, it's evil Jurati now. She's wearing hot combat boots and eating phone batteries, I guess.
I want to slap her bald head. You think it sounds like a PlayStation?
If you leave close enough, can you hear like computer fans whirring?
Like when you accidentally hit your PC tower and you're like, oops, sorry.
Fuck. It's just, it's really weird that you have to start with QQ of this completely detached, mass, unrecognizable thing. And the end point is basically a bog standard superhuman godlike entity that from the original series.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a terrible concept.
No.
I just think that should have come from a result of a longer term build-up and been made clear that this isn't a Borg thing.
No. It could have been their own complete character. And the hard part for me is like somebody who very much enjoys studying like Borg lore and history is the fact that I don't know if this is a entirely new faction of the Borg, what the current collective's status is, because for some reason, modern Trek is just absolutely afraid of touching anything to do with the main Borg after Voyager's Endgame. The refusal to do anything with that since then is impressive, if anything.
But I think, they sort of embrace the idea that what they did in Endgame basically fucked the Borg up forever.
Where does the Borg end up after?
Oh, in Endgame, old Janeway comes back to help them get home early and blows up all the Borg transport conduits. So basically their empire, their ability to travel through the galaxy at whim collapses.
But the strange thing is, like, they've shown that vessels themselves are capable of creating transwarp conduits.
You know, I'm going to check this. I'm just going to go and look this shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Borg history.
Can they not just repair themselves? I don't understand what...
That's the thing.
What was the long-term effect of...
When you start... You know what was the biggest thing? Is when you start giving the Borg clear, like... personable aims removed of the monolithic ideal that they are it's like a, you know, have you ever seen that gif of like the magnetic putty devouring the cube sort of thing, or it is a mass that has a goal and does not take any sort of moral joy in consuming other, it is a necessity. When you remove the ambivalence of it and just the pure functional level of that and start to give it motives and a personality and a vindictiveness, that's when it starts to kind of fall apart and you start to need an antagonist and start to tumble out from the original omnipotent threat of the Q-Who originations. And then into just like, we just have two white women as our spokespeople in Picard. So
it's
like that entire episode with the conversation that Agnes has with Borg Queen, that could have easily been the background discussion of an entire episode of them playing chess or something, because there is so much to get into with the idea of like, how did we get from the Borg all the way in Q-Who and their first contact with a Federation species all the way until where we are now? And I don't even know if this is like singular unit or not.
It fits the Star Trek trend for me. Where they start off with a really good and interesting villain designed to ask us questions about our society, whether it's the Klingons or the Borg, which, I mean, the Borg, what are the Borg an allegory for? Normativism, you know, losing...
Normativism, I've heard some people say, like, you can make the Borg as a really interesting metaphor for capitalism, like heteronormativity, especially. Like, any society that supposes itself to be better by means of collection through the non-consensual assimilation into their culture.
So Britain. I mean, Britain as the gammons want it, not Britain as...
Born British.
I feel like they cue well. But because the Klingons, you know, they're going from being, ooh, look how terrible these communists are, to, yeah, they're kind of fine. And you know, even the Cardassians get humanized, with apologies to Diplodocus Hydrick.
The Yassification of the Borg.
Yeah, why?
Although I will say they're already pretty Yassified. And one of my favorite bits of trivia was that apparently the thing that made Rick Berman, in the beginning stages of like developing the Borg, the thing that Rick Berman was most afraid of at the Borg was that their genders were not easily identifiable.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, okay. So you know what? Now I'm a Borg stan, actually.
Yeah,
like, they put fear into the heart of Berman.
That's my fault. You don't need them to be sexy. That's
one of my favorite. Like, the best line from Q-Who is, you know, it's the, not a he, not a she, they're unlike anything you've ever seen. I'm just like, yes, yeah. Thank you,
sir. Oh, no, they're gay.
Oh, no, all of them. Thanks, like, God.
The only Star Trek villain, like, long-term villain, has never been yassified, if we're going to use, is the Romulans, who just suck.
The Romulans, I feel so, because there's always,
Was Elnor a Romulan yassification? Olivia?
I don't know. Well, you know what? Yes, I'm going to give him that compliment, actually.
Now that I feel he's not coming back.
Wait, it's, I feel like Strange New Worlds is doing a reverse yesification of the Gorn.
Yeah, but Olivia, that's fun. That's fun.
Like, I'm how fun sorry.
Like, you see that big guy, and you're like, ah, look how goofy he is. And Strange New Worlds, like, he rips open people's chests and plants his eggs.
That, they made that canon. That did not exist until they created it. Yes, he committed a few war crimes in TOS, but he wasn't opening up breeding sacks, okay?
That's fine.
They've made him irredeemable. This is devastating to me, and you know.
Hey, listen, okay, listen, but Olivia, okay, but for a century onwards, he gets to play baseball.
You're gonna get my Picard season one moment of that bit where they're doing the top surgery on the XB on the table. You're gonna get that, but like get to see a whole new updated CGI Gorn, gonna do a big reveal shot, and you're just gonna be sitting there like.
I mean,
okay. I have seen the first episode, so I'm not saying anything.
Oh, wait, which one? The next one?
The next one is Children of a Comet, which I think we've seen a teaser for, so I can tell you it's next week is the Uhura episode.
Okay.
One of my favorites.
But you haven't seen New Gorn. Honestly, I don't even want him to look like TOS.
I have seen
Gorn. How did I know?
There has been Gorn-related content, but I have yet to see a Gorn.
Okay, well that's fine. I don't think that's a spoiler. It's fine. I don't want to see that my bestie reflected in that.
his friends don't come off very well, but he's fine. But
preserve the bestie.
I don't understand why they keep making the Borg nicer.
I this is gonna sound extremely coming from me especially. Like a very simple explanation, but it's genuinely, I don't believe it's because they have LGBTQ disabled or diasporic peoples writing the Borg. And they do not understand, people who are not from that perspective do not understand the true threat of the Borg is that when you remove all of the shape starships, when you remove all the threat of Borg cutting beams and transport, when all that is stripped away, you know what the scariest thing about the Borg is? The removal of personhood. The idea that your entire self has been, you have been taken out. Everything that makes you you has been poured out of your body and into a greater mind. It's like dumping out a cup into an ocean. And when you are disconnected from the Borg, you either stay in the Borg for forever and your body is just a small cell in the vast machine that is the Borg. And if by some God-stricken occurrence happens that your body is unplugged from that again, the idea of like coming back from that sort of experience and having to not only rebuild yourself from who you might've been and who you are now, that's scary because it's good work to be a person and make your own self. It can be hard. That's the biggest thing where it's that they don't have people writing the Borg in what makes them scary and then examining that through a lens of how the things that are scary can be made to be revelatory in how much you have built your own self up.
Obviously bad things with Star Trek being down to them not having writers from minority or disenfranchised groups is this is why we need a bingo card for this podcast, really. I think it's,
official I Quit Star Trek bingo card.
I'm trying to understand actually the sort of thread of how Star Trek card was supposed to go. It almost seems like after season one, there's this rushed effort to have a narrative season two. It's almost like as if halfway through they got all these confirmations that they would be able to get all of the TNG cast and then panicked and was like, let's wrap this up. Stats. Yeah.
I think the bit, because like especially it kind of reminds me a lot of how Disco seasons one and two worked, where it's like they were still, you know, they had their rough points, certainly, but it was that like initial thing of like, you know, how fucked season one's pre-production was. And then it's like how much of season three has kind of gone off on its own. And it's like, it's not that you can't not watch season one and two and then like know what's happening in season three, but it's like, if you don't want to, you don't especially have to in certain parts.
The problem with season one of Picard is that Michael Chambers should have simply written a book.
Mm.
And the problem with Picard season two is that Terry Matalas simply should have let it live on its own.
Yeah.
Instead of essentially throttling it in its cradle so he can make Picard season three. Like, we all saw that first episode with Rios on the bridge and Seven with her own ship. And we're like, that's the show we want. We're finally that's the show. Getting that show.
Oh, Stargazer, I could have watched like an entire seven seasons of that. I miss Rios already so much.
Okay. I understand Santiago Cabrera would like to earn some money having a consistent career.
Mm.
But he could have also had that if you gave him what is in his what was it longstandingly in history called the best gig in Hollywood, which is Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, people have give him a Star Trek show, he'll be employed forever.
We've now been informed that he died in a bar fight, though, right? That was his. That's his entire legacy. He didn't even get to go out in a nuke.
Here's my funny thing. What if he just told Guinan to be like, tell him that's how I come up with something. You got 400 years. Give me a good send off. Just make up something that sounds like.
Yeah, it was all good because he was smoking a cigar.
Whereas actually, he got gonorrhea and died like waist deep with that shit.
Yeah. Just like tell Guinan. Like, tell the old man whatever you want to. Come up with something.
How are you going to go out? I'm tempted to go up. He's just going to climb a hill and wait there.
I just feel so incredibly shortchanged by Picard. It's unbelievable. It's like, yeah. I really didn't enjoy season one that much, but season two was going to be exciting. I just felt like, I don't know why I trusted them, is honestly how I feel now.
The thing about Discovery is that Discovery introduces interesting concepts.
Yeah.
Goes somewhere with them, but never follows through on them.
Oh my God, some of the Klingon shit from like the first season is phenomenal. Like, it has certainly problems in certain facets, but like the idea of like how operatic they need it and like the whole, I mean, even look what you're doing right now with Edge of Midnight and really expounding on like the Klingon like conflicts in that and how that's, love the idea that's that, nuts.
Yeah, because it's like, if you just imagine them as like the, as T'Kuvn as like the Klingon equivalent of the Tea Party. And extrapolate that to where we are now. That's fun. Anyway, we'll save that. I'll save that for another time.
I've pushed your Edge of Midnight button.
Don't do that. Olivia's shaking her head. I've already eaten the deep fried haggis in front of her. Tomorrow, I'm offending her even more.
Yes. Yes.
Listening to this on Monday, and you're a fan of the podcast at us, you'll know why. Anyway, but Picard just does introduce. Well, you know, you will obviously you went and ran around with this, but it introduces the concept of the XB as a entity and the concept of reclamation from the Borg as a social, physical, metaphysical process.
Yeah.
And makes it set dressing.
Yes. Yeah.
And that just tells you how, what the Borg has come from like QU and Best of Both Worlds. They're fucking set dressing.
The Reclamation Project, I'm not joking when I say this, was one of the most interesting things that Modern Trek has done in years in terms of like renovation of a familiar faction and putting a new spin on it. I mean, I went off and wrote 500,000 words of supplementary canifer because, like you said, by the end of the season, it becomes set dressing. And then by the end of season two, it becomes extremely inconsequential. Like, that everything with the artifact did not have to happen in season one. They have the throwaway line in the beginning of season two, slight sub-bullet point on this. I thought it was extremely funny when Seven came onto the Stargazer and she's explaining like, oh yeah, they built this ship with like help from tech that they found on the artifact and everything. And like, they're still, you know, they're wary of it. It's like, first of all, show Seven some respect then, if this is going to be a ship powered by Borg technology and you're all going to look at her like she's got the fucking plague. Second of all, why isn't there at least some little scientist nerdy little grubby doobie like, oh wait, I have an idea, this might have to do something with the Borg. You were telling me on a ship of 34, a fleet of 34 other ships, there is not one little twerpy scientist who is at least somewhat familiar with the Borg. We had Shelby 2 years after, what was it, Q-Who, studying the Borg intently. And a ship built by Starfleet does not get the same courtesy?
Okay. It's almost like the writers of Picard season two didn't care.
Schrodinger's XB, where it's, We want to convey the message that bigotry is bad, and we will operate on a sliding scale of how much people hate former Borg and or other Borg-related things.
I'm just still so confused by the loss of the Picard. I'm just confused by the point of it.
Yeah. I'm confused by the point of, like, making this separate faction of Borg when you have not gone through the trouble of, like, you know, you accentuate how damaging the Borg can be to other peoples and species, and you condense the majesty of that giant ship coming out of the wormhole and, like, genuinely beckoning in a tongue that is indiscernible to human ears, saying, help us. Like, that is... I mean, talk about
it. And basically, it wants jump leads, basically. It wants fucking jump leads.
God, it was so, like, I remember, what a beautiful shot that was. And by the end of the season, just reducing it to, like, no evidence of any, like, sort of drone-like agreement into this, no clear, like, how we got from point A of floating off with La Serena to the same, which, by the way, that ship also has the most baller name I've ever heard. It's called the Singularity. Beautiful.
That's the most interesting part about it.
Yeah, cool, huh? Wish you would have known anything about it. How did the ship get there? How many drones are on board it? What did they do in order to assimilate that sort of technology to become a part of that ship? Were they out floating around for 400 years?
Do they have Borg babies?
I am being asked to prove a thesis with no contributing evidence other than white women indulgence, Borg queen. Welcome to a life in the
Why do we trust Star Trek? Why do we trust them? It's episode, 75 of this podcast. Why do we trust them?
You don't trust them. You go off and write your own fan website.
Why do we keep trusting them?
To be a Trekkie is to be a masochist.
Yeah.
We have so much faith and so much heart.
No.
Wow.
And they never take us anywhere.
Oh.
You see?
They can't do anything.
You're going to fly off into some sepia credits one day. I believe in you. Yeah, it's the biggest, like, frustrating part, especially, like, when you have... The most frustrating aspect is when you have small kernels along the way that lead you up to a greater hope for it. It's a lot like, you know, if we're going to go all the way back to Q-Who, you know, you have Best of Both Worlds, and then series classics like I, Borg, like, laying the foundations of what there could be.
Is there a bad TNG Borg episode?
I know some people will argue The Descent, but I actually really enjoy that two-parter, personally. Like, I like the idea of, like, you know, Lore coming in with small synopsis for people who don't remember a lot of The Descent. It's the season 6 finale, season 7 startup of TNG, where they find Lore has taken over the severed XB collective that Hugh uplinked to when the Enterprise dropped them off and they crash landed on some sort of planet, and Lore came in, took advantage of them so he could get to Data. And I like the idea of that episode showing in a metaphor of, like, what a people who are, you know, completely, like, disillusioned with their former suppressive environment being taken advantage of by a cult leader. Because guess what? That's how cult leaders operate, where it's like they come and they see a people that have been devastated, aren't sure of themselves, and are like, I'm going to take advantage of you for my own direction. And that's what Lore does. And by the end of it, you know, you have Picard and the gang charging Hugh. It's like, well, you might not have a leader anymore, but you have each other, and you, Hugh, have the spirit to keep that fire going. Jump forward, everything with Voyager, you know, that's its own, because that's in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, but it's just, like... Was 7 of 9 bad for Borg lore?
No. I don't think so, personally. It's just how she was written, in the sense of there was just some real ups and downs in terms of letting her have her own agency throughout her narrative as an XB.
Gee, who could have predicted letting men write a woman would lead to that?
Interesting.
Who would have predicted?
Like, Dark Frontier is a really good two-parter until you get to the part two of that, when the Boar Queen shows up again, because there's
Dark Frontier again.
Dark Frontier, that's the one where, like, we get into Seven's backstory, and, like, somehow Seven's parents know about the Borg before, like, regeneration happened in Enterprise, where, like, it shows kind of Seven's backstory and, like, how her parents deciding it was smart to bring a small child into the Delta Quadrant to study Borg, which I dunk on Seven's parents, but I also know I would very much be like Herc Hansen.
They pulled a Ducat there, taking their child into a danger zone for no reason.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't believe, I didn't think I'd have to add Seven's parents to our deadbeat dad of the year episode.
I'm divided on Seven's dad, because on one hand, it's like, yeah, dude, not great bringing a small child into a transport conduit, knowing there's probably no way you'll ever be able to get back to Federation space. But I too know that I would be a motherfucker, like, walking around in a Borg cube and be like, ah, yes. Oh, there goes my favorite subject today. Would you bring your kids? Ah, yes.
Would you bring your kids? I wouldn't bring my kids.
I wouldn't bring my kids. No. Nope, not that. I would just go on myself. Bye. See y'all later.
That's like taking your kids on a family. That's like taking your family on a sort of summer holiday to the Korean DMZ.
And be like, there's no way we can ever get back from this. Sorry. It does make me sad, though, especially like in unbetter episodes like Unimatrix Zero, the original plot line of that, knowing that instead of Axum, that weirdo, that guy was originally going to be Seven's dad. And there would be like this cool father-daughter rekindling of a relationship where it's
it was Compet. Remember the Compet, Olivia?
Who is that?
Remember when we were in the Matrix Zero?
Yeah.
And the Borg train. And like
Borg train.
There was the guy, the completely forgetful Borg guy.
Yeah, that guy.
This man is so utterly forgettable to me. I'm so
in my head, I was getting Borgified Vedic Barail. Which I know is incorrect.
So there we go. Yeah, he did kind of look like it too.
It's like, there's like three, like Star Trek Circus, like four identical, like white guys. It's like love interest for Troy, Crusher, Kira, and Seven.
I was going to say, in my memory, this is probably some amalgamation of just nothing men.
Remember Shakar?
Great guy.
Remember Shakar was also the candle ghost?
Ew, that's the same guy.
Was he really? Yeah. Oh my god.
See, they're cool. All,
it's they like when you find out
the same.
Okay, this is my moment of when I realized that Admiral Forrester from Star Trek Enterprise is the same XB DILF in Survival Instinct.
XB like, DILF, you say?
Olivia, no. We've had too much DILF content already this week. I just think about how, like, because obviously I need to actually finish reading Through the Eye of the Needle. Life is away.
Oh, wowie, thank you.
But just how, like all Star Trek episodes, I mean, all Star Trek plots and ideas, why didn't you get someone from a marginalized community to do it?
Listen, you got to give them time. It's only been 50 years. Give them another 50 to figure it out.
Yeah.
And then we'll start seeing progress. Just be patient, John. Gosh.
Be patient. One day they'll figure out what the key
is. Give it a century and then we'll see.
Like, it's just really when you have this, the most infuriating thing is when you have the kernels for these extremely great ideas and like examining what it is to be like, you know, removed from a suppressive identity. And then it just devolves back into like a very classic villain trope and a entity that you had put on a questioning pedestal, like, well, what happens when you separate the mouthpiece for a collective consciousness that is both trying to get back to that collective consciousness and also being faced with the reality of you are a separate unit now and you no longer have this connection that you had before? It's frustrating when you have those beginnings and then it doesn't follow through on any of it, because it's like you see the beginning possibility in that narrative. And then it just falls back into like, we need an end of series, either villain or hook. And especially it's frustrating when you have that sort of like possibility being supplemented with by drones, and then not taking the time to extrapolate on what a drone means to either a Borg queen or somebody else craving that connection sort of thing. So it's like, why is Agnes any different from another drone? Why is the Borg queen any different from another drone? Because we don't get to see any of those SWAT team Borg TF people, you know, going through the same process that Agnes did. Whereas in something like Voyager, for even as crummy as some of the not great Borg episodes were, you at least always felt a sense of like, you got what a Borg was. Like, you understood what a drone was. Even if latter series and seasons kind of started to lose the thread of like the main threatening aspect of it is like, oh, you know, it's the collective consciousness and erasing your identity. You at least always knew how the Borg drones, like you saw them. There was that indication. Whereas in Picard, you just have the Borg queen, who is a drone, who is a Borg, but never any extrapolation on what, like, the implication of that means.
And in those final scenes, we don't see anyone else, right? They didn't have the budget to show us anything else. I'm just trying to think.
They built a Stargazer set.
Listen, they wasted a lot of cash there.
You know, it reminds me of the fact that they built the Enterprise bridge set for the Endless Discovery without knowing they were going to get the green light for Strange New Worlds.
Worth it.
In retrospect, worth it. But like, it just feels like you could have not done that and had a larger collection. You could have, because they skimped in other ways. Like, the Stargazer's shuttle bay is literally just the same AR wall as the Discovery shuttle bay. You can see the season four Discovery. You can literally see season four of Discovery shuttles in the background if you look carefully enough. But so why not skimp it a bit and show us more about the collective? Or don't skimp it and just actually spend five episodes of a tug of war about what collective identity is and what is there such thing as a positive assimilatory identity, which... Because we have this whole thing in Star Trek where people compare the Federation to the Borg, especially happens a lot in DS9. And I disagree with it for the fundamental reason that... Yeah. I mean, it's a problem, it's the one thing of the long-standing problem with Star Trek is the lack of any shows from a civilian perspective, is that we don't...
Yeah.
We are told about the social and cultural diversity of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't shown it because we see the Federation through the lens of people will pre-institution with military institution, but if we're going to read Starfleet as the text says, we see it from the eyes of an institution.
Yes.
So we see the institutional culture of Starfleet, not the Federation. So, like, I don't like the comparisons because it kind of undermines the purpose of the Borg and the plot and what they're meant to oppose the Federation with.
Yeah, because at least with the Federation, for as faulty as it is, you do have the option of living as an individual unit. I mean, if anything, the comparison of the Federation and the Dominion is much more, you know, potent because it's like you are still a functioning member as a separate individual within the Dominion. The Borg are just, that is consumption unhinged. It is an organism that is not a political body. It is a single entity that spans light years. And that was the most, like you were saying earlier, Olivia, Q who, where that is the coolest thing about it is because of that immensity. It is the unknown aspect of it, is that our singular feeble brains will never be able to computate being so expanded in a multitude like that. It is not one voice, it is billions, and you are somewhere in that slurry. And you don't know where you ends and you don't know where the collective starts. And
and sorry to bring it back to Picard, but where we are left with now is they ask people if they want to be assimilated. Is that the crux of it?
Okay, but the thing is
still not morally great. I think I'm sick of them trying to convince me that these slightly terrible women are.
And that's the unfortunate thing where it's like you have that thing now where it's like, okay, great. So this is just two white women going around being like, our way of life is better. Why don't you come join us? Like that completely gets...
Someone could be having a bad week and they can't change their mind after that.
No.
It's still kind of a cult with extra steps.
Yeah. Like, I will readily admit, I'm the first ding-dong that, like, once the Borg cube shows up, I'm going to throw my ass, like, quap style into the cube, be like, all right, hook me up, let's go. But also, there's a distinction between, like, a entity like that that has no definitive, like, high point, you know, in terms of, like, a queen structure. And you can still do that with the Borg. You can still have those, like, routers as the queen units if Trek ever decides to establish the fact that there are multiple queen units and not just one all the time, because that would just be ludicrous. You can still have the idea of, you know, some freaks out there be like, sure, I'll hook myself up to the Borg, whatever. But when you limit the perspective and us seeing it, the face of that consensual collective as two white women, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, if you're going to adapt them to be quote unquote good, yeah, actually have a solution, because all you've done is weaken them.
The obvious solution is the one that we can't have now, because the problem with writing a fabulous fanfic is that it can, the moment you start putting something on the internet, it can simply never be made by anybody else.
Yeah.
So the only way we're going to get a liberated Borg concept as close to you is if you get kidnapped, put into a van by Jumper Sitters, taken to a dark room in Hollywood somewhere and told to come up with a plot in 3 hours.
Fine, whatever, I'll do it.
That's how more Star Trek should be written, that they kidnap a fan, make them pitch a plot, and if they don't like it, they disappear them.
Olivia, you show up for like an I Quit Star Trek recording and it's just like the flag in the background. We're like, where's John at? That's weird. And, like, you're just in some CBS room somewhere.
Like, John Bonsetti's cup and sits down in my place. He was like, oh,
hey, no. They got like a printout of your, like, fucked up Federation government map and, like, explain this. How do we make this work?
Like, if you don't explain, we cut off another ransom mouth's toes. What? Like, what do you mean another one?
Another one. No, they already got started before you were there. The thread
you
is
see that, you see that hair product? His hair's stuck like that. He can't wear hats now.
They put some flex tape paint on it.
It's actually made out of like polystyrene and various like plastics. You have to take it off. It's like a Lego man's hair.
Devastating. Absolutely
devastating.
He's a beautiful beast. His and Jonathan Delarco's hair, like Hugh's hair, is the most luscious shit I've ever seen from an XP. The funniest thing to me is like EMH, this amazing hologram doctor who chooses to project himself as like balding, just creates XBs or like helps regenerate them into just having the most luscious heads of hair. And I appreciate him so much for that in Voyager.
It's a good achievement from you, especially considering he had no hair beforehand.
He was bald, little guy. He had a barcode on and everything. And like, oh God. Hugh just deserve more than the world. I still don't know why they chose to do that. They didn't
need to kill him.
They didn't need to do that.
What is it with Picard writers? And instead of us letting a character have an open ending where we could see them again, just fucking murdering them.
The most disappointing thing is, too, it's like, I'm definitely in the camp. It's like, I would love to see Hugh again, some sort of expanded story or, like, involvement from his point. But the most frustrating thing is, like, knowing the inspiration behind Hugh came from Jonathan Delarco's former partner that he unfortunately lost in the AIDS crisis. And in my opinion, I will not speak for Jonathan Delarco in his willingness to play Hugh. That is not my place to speak his willingness or opinion, but also the fact that people are like, oh, just bring him back, when the character was somebody inspired who died in the AIDS crisis, isn't a super great look, you know? And that's the hard part, where it's like, I would love to see this character again. Picard writers, you get an absolute free pass just to say he never died in the first place, in my opinion.
Yeah, you don't kind of get to Spock him.
No, like in that circuit, and especially for like the very cheap way in how he did die too is just say he didn't, that's fine. You've hand waved enough deaths in Star Trek that you can get away with that. It's fine, actually.
I've never been like more upset to see, I mean, I wasn't upset to see Elnor alive again, but just it just added to the complete underwhelming
yeah,
bullshit also, nature of the ending.
Yeah, and like at first, okay, so my pet theory was when Borgrati went off with La Serena, I thought that she was going to show up with an XB Elnor because Elnor was still in the cold storage. And the big mythos with Borg is that you can resurrect a body after 72 hours with nanoprobes, as was proven by your favorite character, Olivia, Neelix from Mortal Coil.
Yeah, Neelix died for a while. That was a bad... We haven't done Mortal Coil.
Why didn't we just let it happen? I won't watch it until it's for this podcast. Why don't we just let the world be at peace? It's my question.
Well, we have Borg's play for Neelix's continued existence.
Borg communion with Neelix. Actually, no, I take that. I don't know.
Would Neelix be better if the Borg assimilated Neelix, would they reject him?
Honestly, there's a 90% chance.
Just deposit him on a planet somewhere, take all the knowledge, take all the...
What can he offer them?
I don't know. A friendly shoulder, be like, I'm gonna cook you up some food. Well, I mean, the Borg don't need to eat. A wealth of a library of different recipes. What else would they find out from him? They already know everything about Talaxians, supposedly. I don't know. I don't know. Send us your Neelix boons to the collective at iquitstartrek.pod.
Didn't the Borg say that Talaxians were too insignificant to be assimilated?
No, that was the Kazon.
Honestly, if the Borg assimilate Talaxians or your Neelix specifically, they're the victim in that situation.
Damn, cold.
Like,
my favorite thing, if we're going to do like, you know, species analytics and stuff, my favorite is the idea of when the queens were first assimilated, like their species, because it is a separate...
Queens are a separate species?
Yes. All queen units are derived from a certain species called 125, who all we know about them is their Borg species label. The fact that apparently something to do with their brain chemistry rendered them as being very efficient with sorting out the collective voices. And that for a long time, the queens were just kind of in the background and not actively used. So my personal... Charlie Kelly writing on a whiteboard, a corkboard of connecting the dots, is that queen units really didn't get super used/activated for constant interaction with the collective until Q Who began, or until Best of Both Worlds began, when you had Q disrupting the natural flow of, you know, assimilation and integration of different species. And then you get to something like Best of Both Worlds, where the assimilation of Picard didn't obviously work out and the Borg suffered a catastrophic loss with the absence of Locutus. And it's like, okay, we need to start using queens more. And that's why you get them, you know, in First Contact after Dark Frontier. Obviously, there's a bit more of like a real life narrative structure you have with different writers coming onto Star Trek and be like, okay, we can just use the queens or whatever. But if you made me be like, okay, explain this from a canon perspective, that's my idea of it, where it's like you had Q Who knocked over the first domino and introduced the idea. It's like a dude coming over and kicking over an anthill and knocking off that entire undisturbed flow of an ant colony, where it's like, oh, we need to pick up the guns. It's
all about little fruitful.
Yes.
And now he's dead.
And now he's, well, I don't know, is he?
So sad.
Well, he's moved on. Oh dear, how sad, never mind.
His great swan song of nutting so hard in space that you needed 35 ships to block it. I finally got to hug Jean-Luc. Jean-Luc almost kissed me. I can't take it anymore.
No, I watched that scene. I was looking at it thinking John Delancey and Patrick Stewart would like the kiss in this scene, but they've been told they're not allowed to, haven't they? They look at each other. I swear to God, Patrick Stewart looks at John Delancey's lips.
That entire galactic event is just Q stuffing down his homosexuality further. When he's like, I didn't get to kiss him. Why didn't I do it?
The whole shit show would have been worth it just for that.
Laris would get jealous. We can't afford that.
Oh. We can't afford to piss off the Romulan Irish lady.
Oh, I love it. Wait, was she Laris though? Talon? I don't know.
Talon was Laris's ancestor.
Okay. Okay. Wait. I mean, that tracks. Star Trek will just have the exact same person play the relative. That's fine.
On that note,
if Brent Spiner shows up in Strange New Worlds, I'm going to shoot myself.
Oh, please. I'm sorry. You've had enough work.
You know, I'm starting to wonder, did Brent Spiner see Alex Kurtzman hit a kid with his car?
This is the only explanation.
Is that, like, he saw him hit a kid. It's like, me and my brother have a theory, well, it's mainly his theory, that the reason James Corden has a lot of work is that he saw a Hollywood producer hit a kid with his car, and he just keeps pulling that thread to make sure he keeps getting work.
He keeps it under wraps. The only
explanation is blackmail.
Yeah. So did Brent Spiner do the same? Did he see Alex Kurtzman, like, hit someone's car, like, crash into someone's car and not leave his insurance, or, like, catch him performing something, a satanic ritual or something? And
he's coming back for, like, Picard season 3, too, which is really strange considering the ending of Picard season 1.
Yeah, 50 quid right now says that he's not coming, he's playing another fucking soon. They've introduced one contemporary brother, which it's never been mentioned again. And they're just,
Meanwhile, Geordi's standing there like that one Drake and Josh picture where there's no door on the wall, like looking at Picard, be like, hey, Jean-Luc, where's Data and Hugh?
Like, so have you seen Hugh recently, Admiral Picard?
Yeah.
Hey, look, Broca's over there.
Hey, what were you doing on that one new planet out there, Coppelius? Data was what now?
There's a whole planet of them.
Interesting.
Stop putting Brent Spiner in things.
He's a good actor. We get it. He is a good actor. Let him go on to do other things.
If you're going to have him in TOS, you have to lean on the fact that TOS has the same guest stars playing different characters, and I would play like a fucking Starfleet Commodore who's not a Soon.
I can't wait for him to play Prometheus Soon. We've got Adam Soon. We've got Sylar. I don't know. They have all got those weird biblical allegory.
I mean, he should do Cain and Abel Soon. Where the camera keeps switching, and they've got like one of the mustache. One is just him and a mustache.
No,
like Sam and Jim Kirk.
Oh, I love Sam Kirk. Oh, I love you.
I can't believe they expected me to know who the hell that was. I thought that was the vampire boy.
I'm still furious that they didn't just put Paul Wesley in a mustache.
That's exactly who I thought it was.
I thought they should have just done that. It would have been so funny.
But
it would have made it would be funny. It would also made the reveal of Jim Kirk being better because they'd be like, "Oh, Jim Kirk's not it. It's Sam Kirk." And then everyone would be like, "Oh no, this is actually the Sam Kirk. They tricked us." And then rip it off.
And that's when Spock figures out. He's like, "I'm not the biggest fan of like facial hair."
It's okay. I just stop. They're turning the Soons into the Skywalkers, but shit it.
Oh my, yeah, actually that's a good, yeah. By the way, the whole Soon like interacting with the Borg Queen too was just like, I mean, already non-sexy drones aside, unfortunately, the fact that like the Borg Queen would be like able to hear what the drones are like in the presence of Soon, like she, you know, I immediately know like they would be able to hear, but like hearing Soong's like big blowhard speech and everything, and like the Queen not just turn about and be like, "Wow, you're really like full of yourself, aren't you?" Be like, "We're out of here, bye."
I don't understand why she didn't assimilate him. I thought she did for a bit.
Wait, assimilate who?
Brent Spiner.
John, your brain is so big.
I'm aware of this.
Huge, like planet.
I've been told. But why not?
That's a good point, actually.
Why is Picard so shit?
Wow.
Why?
Goddamn. Okay. Yeah, actually.
You know, we're going to forget how bad. There's a great shame. I've been thinking about this recently, which is that Strange New Worlds has essentially had a lot longer and a lot much easier breathing space to decide what it's about and to come up with a show and to figure out what its aesthetic's going to be, what its plot's going to be like.
Yeah.
Which means that it's coming, it's hitting the ground running.
But why didn't Picard?
Picard, I don't think Picard did.
Picard, well, I mean, they didn't know how the show was originally going to end when they first started it. Like,
didn't begin either.
And also, I think,
Why did they have, like, completely different plots from...
But Picard and Discovery have this messiness to start with, but they also have the most potential. Like, realistically, where Strange New Worlds can begin and where Strange New Worlds can end in terms of storytelling diversity.
Yeah.
There's not much gap. Like, Strange New Worlds can't push the boundaries of narratives that far.
No.
Whereas Discovery has. And does Picard have the opportunity to? And those shows are going to be pushed to the secondary by Strange New Worlds, I think.
Yeah.
And as much as I love Strange New Worlds, that's not good. Because I want queer narratives. I want black narratives. I love the 2260s. I love the aesthetic, but I want a show in the 2260s that's about black, that's about marginalized people, that's about gay people. I don't want, I like Captain Pike, but it's Picard, and especially the stuff with the Borg, has had this opportunity to tell us different stories, and they've just not done it.
No,
that's why I'm furious with Picard, really. So they just had these opportunities, even in this season. We got tinges of that with the stuff around ice.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, don't even bring me back to that.
But they were trying to do something different to make an overt political statement about.
Yeah.
They do. They refer to them as literal fascists.
Yeah. The fact that they were so, applaud it, especially for not doing the DS9 thing where they come up with a separate name for it. Like, no, this is just straight up ice. They are evil and ghoulish. And like you said, they started off with that in very genuine.
Well, I think DS9 has the excuse that the internet, that ice didn't exist in the 90s. It was a creation of the Patriot Act.
That's true. Yeah, actually, yeah, good point.
But I'm sure if ice had been around, then they'd probably used it. But
would they have then had the next day Rio saying, this country's great. This era is the best.
I love this century. I just smoking a big cigar at
Why is he doing a Danny Warbucks impression?
Honest, the contrast, and then for him to stay in that era.
I can see him staying if they built this contrivance of this era is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of more use here than I am in the future.
Or like even showing him like helping out, which I mean, I suppose he did with like getting the people out of the clinic and everything. It's like, showing that other than just like this fanciful, like, oh, I enjoy this century. It's like, I want to, having input from Teresa too, where it's like, would you stay here and like, take care of your clinic? Or it's like, do you want to come to the future with me sort of thing? There's just, and it robs us of the process of like having possibly Rios as a future captain and, interacting with his former experience as captain of the Stargazer and now looking at Borgrati, especially, it's like, how he knew her and, his new life with Teresa and Ricardo and having them on the ship. So.
Honestly, that entire storyline and just this sort of complete update of their lives, the happy ending felt too happy. Everything worked out perfectly and they lived happy ever after.
I just think that's completely, what's the point?
What's the point?
I just don't care about them.
It's not that I don't care, because I do enjoy the concept of Borgrati and like a consensual Borg. It was just done for nothing, and I have nothing to work with, and hence the audience has nothing to work with in understanding both their intentions, what they have done, and what they are made of. As this, it's like, are they the current Borg now? Are the other Borg still out there even after Voyager's endgame? What's the reclamation project doing? I'm proving a hypothesis without any evidence or like factors to assist in my experiment sort of thing. And that's
they're not really trying anything.
No, you had Picard season one, who just kicked the reclamation project to the curb in any sort of like way of like showing this is how XBs are able to mend themselves through a supportive community who understands what you went through, and nothing to do with that. And then going to Picard season two, where it's like, that idea, anything to do with, oh, this is how we are able to expound upon, you know, like Borg who have been separated and possibly aren't, you know, the most immediately responsive to having a life outside of the collective. Oh no, you're just going to make an entirely tiny collective again that's based around the faces of two white women and not rejoicing in any sort of other supplementary experience or assisted thought voice. Okay.
I just wish Jurati went to therapy. I honestly...
Me putting a Borg queen is like an XB in my own story. It's like that was the really big missed opportunity. I know I've seen this previously, but like the idea of examining a Borg queen as an XB, much in the way that they would do either Hugh or Seven, and using it as both a way of coming into her individuality and also examining that institutionalized privilege that she had as a Borg queen, and then being like, you can do something and supplement the community around you through your own individual will, and thereby creating a cooperation of your own. It's like, So.
Yeah, but that would have required them to think for more than 15 minutes, and they obviously didn't.
I'm truly still processing my disappointment. I really just finished watching it before the recording. I think I'm going to start. There's probably going to be some angry tweets in the coming days. Of just, you wasted 2 years of my life.
Yeah.
It's... I've had three or four different people actually come to me and be like, can I talk about Star Trek Picard in the podcast? Including some other very unexpected previous guests. And I was just like, well, people really didn't like this.
You know what it's like that Tyra Banks meme where it's like, I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you.
We were rooting for you. Like episodes 1 through 5. Knocked it out of the park. Amazing. Hey, fantastic job.
You know what just made me furious? Remember the Bajoran tablet?
What was that?
Remember there was a Bajoran tablet in Picard's house in the first
episode? His little fucked up evil house, yes.
No, in his normal house.
Oh, in his normal, that was
he had he had one of those tablets that the Pyroth was hiding in.
Hmm.
I remember how we thought there was going to be a link to the Prophets and Sisko? And it was a set dressing?
Never really had hope that would be any ever links to DS9. I don't know what the hell embargo is going on.
They're afraid of it because they're afraid of, you know what, this is my bold take of the week. I've been gestating on this for a week. They're afraid of DS9's perceived radicalism, but not for how radical DS9 actually is in text. Because if you just did that now, it would align very much with the current tone of Star Trek.
Yeah, that's a very
good point. But it's just kind of perceived radicalism they're afraid to go. Also, I think, is that the all the actors on DS9 would probably have a lot of conditions for coming back and the characters, whereas like Patrick Stewart,
you need it to be them specifically. It can be anyone.
Yeah.
Bring a new generation in. I just want some connection.
It's the poll you saw yesterday, you know, where it's like, would you have like the newer characters, old characters, or a mix of both? And it's like, you can definitely do a mix of both new and young characters. I mean, even look at what we did with Picard in like the very beginning. It's like you had the thing is, you can't make the entire series about the old characters. They have to be a supplement, or at least supplementary to the world that is around them. And the new world, you have to make them supplementary to the world that you are trying to illustrate. Like they are the assistive tools, the paints by which you paint the world and the story that you are trying to create.
I mean, it's Strange New Worlds. No, Picard season 3 and Strange New Worlds to a strong extent make me frightened that Star Trek is given up on being adventurous.
I hope not, especially with like Disco too. I
think the rumors that I think Disco's could get full 7 seasons. I can't see them not doing that.
They better. The idea that so many people have like been dunking to on Discovery in favor of Stranger Worlds, like motherfuckers, this show would not exist without Discovery.
Also, I really don't think a lot of people are actually thinking that.
No,
I think a lot of people are just over vocalizing the three, a bunch of like, if you, I was looking some Stranger Worlds clips on YouTube, and it's basically if you put Stranger Worlds into YouTube, you get the same five white men complaining about it in circles.
Yeah.
Oh, they're still at it? I don't
know. No, it's quite amusing because they hate Stranger Worlds too, which...
I saw some sort of weird, like, someone said, Stranger Worlds is actually good because it's written by Trek fans now. And they were like, oh yeah, it's got Akiva Goldman. And I was like, he did Picard as well.
Picard season...
What are you talking about? Akiva Goldman was
a producer on season one of Discovery.
It's hilarious to witness the mental gymnastics to sort of overcome the fact that sometimes you just don't have, like, something doesn't have to be your favorite. It doesn't mean it was a disgrace to the franchise.
I don't like, yeah. I don't think, I will be quite honest with you, Discovery is not, it's good, deeply fine.
Season 4 of Discovery was nothing to me. I have to go back when we have Paramount Plus and rewatch it.
Yeah, I'm sure if I watch it all at once, it'll be better.
Season 4 for me is like, I loved everything that did not have to do with the DMA. That was just the most infuriating part of it. And then also I wanted to throw Tarka off the parking lot airlock.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same problem with Discovery is that everything is less, everything is more interesting than the main plot.
Yeah. Like,
which demonstrates that the writers know how to make something good, but they haven't quite figured out that they do yet.
Yeah. Like, all the stuff that they alluded to in the beginning of season 4, like there was like the big time skip. I was like, that's the shit I want to see. Like, just them zipping around space. Captain Burnham, you know, talking about like different shit that the Federation has, like, now that we're in the 32nd century, it's like exploring where these peoples are. That's the most interesting thing. And I mean, even going back to the Borg, where it's like, you can do that, where it's like you have this big time gap of 30 years, you know, in between Q-Who and like what the Borg are dealing with now, especially in like XB circumstances of the Reclamation Project, where it's, this is what these, this is the pieces that they are left to pick up. And the most fascinating journey behind that is watching those people become people again and watching what comes out of the wreckage that the Borg has left behind.
But then we got white women instead.
Yeah, white women indulgence. I hope they had fun at least girl bossing around LA. That's the most I can.
It's like Sex in the City, but with assimilation champions.
The drones weren't even sexy, man.
They were... Yeah.
I didn't get you motherfuckers with Strange New Worlds got a cooler alien like conversion scene than I did with drones. I'm jealous.
Yeah. I mean,
just wanted some tubes. I mean,
I'm sure there'll be tubes in the future, but future tubes. The Borg can't live with them. Yeah, that's
it. Can't live without them.
I mean, I wasn't going to say that, but you can.
Oh, me? I will say that then for me. Also, Olivia, could you do me a favor real quick? Sorry, you can edit this out. Can you click on that one link that I put in chat? I want to see your reaction.
I witnessed it, but the conversation had moved on. You know what?
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it now.
Too much chest. Too much chest.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
He has a protrusion in his face.
Admiral Forrest is a DILF. I hate it.
He's a DILF.
I mean, on the subject of cursed content, hi, as this is your newest entry since the introduction of Olivia's high art section.
Oh,
yeah. Do you like to suggest a high art episode to Olivia's list of high art episodes?
I fear that it's going to be a Borg ep, and I just don't
join. We need to join the ranks of masks and
The ranks of masks, the manx of Spock's brain, you know.
Anything to...
Okay, a really good Borg episode that I feel like...
It's not going to be good. It's got to be high art.
Okay, like ludicrous in the vein of masks.
I mean, yeah.
I'm actually going to recommend Descent Part 1. If not because I want to see your reaction to Krosis Star Trek.
I need a lowdown of what that was, even though I believe I've already watched it.
The Descent is, so you don't have to watch the whole two-parter. If you want to, that's fine. But the first part of The Descent involves them going to, like, finding out, like, the Borg are screwing around with some sort of Starfleet base on a planet called Oniaka 3. And they don't know why these Borg are acting so individual. It's clear that they are no longer connected to the collective, but there's a bit of a mystery. And they try to beam on board at one point, and the drones themselves, it's very strange. They're never picked up or anything, but they do capture one, put him in the brig. And he says he has a name, which is what?
Good for him.
Yeah. And from there, the plot begins to elaborate further. But I just want to know your, I just want to see your interaction with Krosis, because he's one of my favorite. Brian Cousins, if you're out there, no, sir. Thank you for everything you've done for your 5 minutes of support, XP. That's my recommendation, because the Descent first part is fun. The second one definitely picks up in terms of, like, plot and also some great DeForge moments, if anything. Very satisfying, in my opinion, ending to, like, the whole lore sub-arc throughout TNG.
Isn't that the one where they leave Blazing Bev in charge of a starship?
Yes.
So there's a potential Soul King. And, you know, that's really the key to my heart. Just
focusing on one random character. Yeah, that's, I think you're going to, yeah, that's my thing. It's like, I think you're going to do this particular. Also, you get to see Lore wearing his funny little Borg onesie cosplay, which that's always fun.
Very cute, very cute. You know what? So I will put it in the reserves of the high art category, because I need to review. Okay. I need to review. Yeah, you know what? Next time I do a live tweet, I got to get on it.
I will await that, because I just, there's Krosis I have taken for my own, like, Borg lore canon, and just, he's a guy now full on. So he didn't die. He's fine.
Oh no. Oh no. This is a trauma.
No, you're gonna have fun. I love showing people The Descent. It's a good time.
And obviously you're going to plug to the listeners. Obviously.
Surely, thank you. Yeah, find me at Raiju the Haiju, Admiral Silly Boy Bongwater. I am also the author of the Oniaka 3 project, which attempts to bridge the ending of The Descent into the events of Picard season 1 by creating an entire faction of the Liberated Borg Cooperation and Reclamation Project as operated by Hugh & Co. So you can find that at either Oniaka 3 project on Twitter or theoniaka3project.com. I've got all that lore on there, is free to use. Also has availability for Star Trek Adventures TTRPG sheets if you'd like a custom homebrew XB character based around that lore. I'm working on a timeline. There's just a lot of little events I got to account for. And then also my graphic designer brain wants to make it look nice and pretty for people to read easily. So, but that is my Borg lore specialties.
It's very fruity. I do recommend everybody who likes fruity things, check it out.
If the idea of an entire population of cyborgs are all trans, gay, and anarcho-collective communists appeals to you, you've hit the right pay dirt.
Yeah. If you like complaining, you can find us at Quiz Star Trek Pod on Twitter. We got an email last month. Congratulations to whoever sent us. We haven't read it yet.
Oh God. Okay. We need to turn a leaf.
We promise we're going to read our emails once a month minimum.
Yes. You might that's be competent.
Open it up. Look at it. Okay. Interesting. All right. I'm gonna let you percolate here. It's like a bit of compost.
Fine wine.
Emails don't feel like real correspondence to Gen Z, okay? That's what you need to understand. There's no urgency on that homepage.
Yeah. If you want to really get a message to us on Twitter, at QueerStarTrekPod, send us a message at us, or, you know, throw a brick through my window, send me a telegram, carrier pigeon, that'll get through. Buy a shirt of RT Public Store.
Oh, yeah.
Jeans Vision shirt, can absolutely recommend.
It's a good shirt. I'm going to try and make some more merch soon. And send us ideas. I mean, a bingo card shirt might be fun. I don't know. Maybe a shirt that does this fuck Neelix.
Well, we don't want that to be misconstrued or misunderstood. So let's be careful about the messages we're putting out in the world.
A group of half a dozen people at Mission Seattle in 2023 wearing all Fuck Neelix shirts, and you don't know.
And Ethan, just Ethan Phillips walks past them looking very concerned. Like,
interesting.
Slowly steps away. But yeah, buy our shirts. The money goes to charity. Be horrible to us on Twitter. Be nice to us on Twitter. We prefer the latter. And if you want to say to the listeners, Olivia, I usually do this bit, but
I'd just like to say that Uhura in Strange New Worlds is a queen, a legend. She is competent. She is the greatest, and she's mine. So back off.
Celia Rose Gooding, if you're listening to this, that'd be weird, but it'd be cool. Come on the podcast.
Absolutely.
You're like between me and Olivia.
She's a full on trackie. She is 22, right?
She's 4 months younger than me, older than me, 4 months older than me.
And like almost 2 years younger than me. Okay, guys, I'm really having a hard time being a geriatric Zoomer. Bye.
On that note, thank you so much for coming on. Hi.
Thank you for having me. It was a delight to talk Borg Shop. I'll see you in the assimilation room. We have fun down here.
Sure.
The tubes are complimentary.
Until next time, don't let your collective become two white women. Be diverse. Meet lots of different people from different cultures and then destroy their individuality and turn them into tribes.
Yeah, to get a variety before you ruin lives.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.